Welcome, Christine. Thank you for agreeing to be on the Yoga Therapy Hour again. I think this might be your third go round.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it is. I think you're right.
I try not to have the same person more than once a year, and we're in our third or fourth year, so that sounds about right. And I always have to say, your episodes are some of the most popular episodes, and I think it's because of your connection with neuroscience and yoga and philosophy and social justice. I think that nexus is a really sweet nexus and where a lot of people want to be. It kind of leads me to this question about your marketing is exquisite and so many people love you and your programs. And I just want to talk for a moment before we get started on yoga, self-regulation, and the vagus nerve. I just want to talk like, what is your special sauce for getting people interested in what you're doing?
Oh, I wish it was a special sauce. It's sort of that peek behind the curtain thing. There's so much more that goes on than what it looks like. But I will tell you my origin story with that, which was it was back in 2015. And I don't know if you remember this group. It was called something like the Yoga Research Group on Facebook. Do you remember them? And it was massive. There were like 100,000 people in that group. And somebody was complaining, like somebody put a post up. It was a very controversial, like back at that time, everybody was like going at it. They have a lot more dialogue on Facebook than there is now, and much less advertising, of course. It was actually social media. But anyway, at that time, somebody put up a post and it said something like, I'm so furious about this person who's teaching yoga and making these claims, and they're so popular, and, but it's garbage, that sort of thing. As somebody who's serious about yoga, we've seen this for years now, right? But this was 10 years ago. And so there were lots of comments agreeing and saying, like, this is so bad. And then I saw this one comment and it said, you can complain all you want about all the nonsense that's out there in the yoga world, or you can use the well-known tools of marketing and do something about it. And that comment changed my life. I realized, like, why would I complain anymore when there are these well-known tools of marketing? And I decided I had to become a marketing expert, and I had to invest in myself and my business, and I had to hire a marketing person. So I have an in-house digital marketing person that I've been working with for 8 years. It took me a while to find her. And I decided I had to pull out the stops and do it. I wasn't going to do it in a way that was going to be as popular as somebody like Adrian or Cassandra or any of these kind of YouTube or Kino or any of those people, because that's just not who I am. And, more power to them. Like, that's fine. But I needed to do it in a way that was really in line with my values, and also that was going to promote yoga in a way that I felt was authentic and the real thing, So, is there a special sauce? No, it's a combination of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, trial and error, and then just like deciding that I was going to stick to the real stuff, and not compromise it. And sometimes you have to really point out to people exactly what you're doing and how it's different than what other people are doing, that differentiation piece. And that can feel uncomfortable because I don't want to criticize yoga with Adrienne. But, like, let me just be frank. She's an actor. She's a trained actor. And there are many, many trained actors. You're from Los Angeles, who then became yoga teachers. So what she's doing is good. She's introducing yoga to lots of people. But there's problems with that kind of model. And I think that just being frank about it, like not trying to throw Adrienne under the bus, but be like, let's look underneath the curtain there and see what that's about. And are you okay with that? Like, if you're okay with learning yoga from an actor, go for it, But if you want to learn yoga with somebody who's been studying yoga most of their life and who's completely ensconced in the tradition, it's going to be a different, you're going to need something different. If you want a hamburger, go to McDonald's. It's popular. If you want a really good hamburger or veggie burger or whatever, you go to the small restaurant, in your town that makes good quality stuff. So that's the issue that we're all facing. And I think as people that are really committed to this work, we're all facing it, and we have to make some tough decisions sometimes.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour Season 9. When I had this idea about a year ago that we could take an entire year for all of you to come on the podcast and tell your stories, I had no idea how overwhelming the response would be and how amazing it would be to get to know so many of you, our faithful listeners. I've gotten to know friends and see faces and connect with hearts. All so many people that I didn't even know were out there. People just like you and I. I'm so grateful. And the response has been so large that we're no longer needing anyone to sign up for telling your story. And I want to thank all the people who came forward to make this year on the Yoga Therapy Hour so successful. I'm so grateful to you. All right, let's go meet our guest for today and hear another story. Well, you just outlined the conversation I had in my head this morning, because oftentimes I teach this little yoga for business class and we're winding down now. This is our last cohort. And I'm always bringing up your website and saying, see what she's doing here. Look at this. She's figured this out. This is what we all need to be doing. On one hand, I think you are fabulous at what you do and you've got the goods and you're teaching from deep, deep experience over many decades. But there's also a lot of other people that are doing something similar. They're not being seen, not having people sign up. And they're like, what's wrong with me? And I think what they have not figured out is what you just said. You have to figure out how to either be a great marketing person on your own and start learning marketing and grinding through Facebook ads and all sorts of newsletters and how to get the catchy headlines, you know, what do I write about and all this stuff. Or you have to hire someone to help you do that and invest in yourself. You can be a great yoga teacher or a great yoga therapist and not get seen and not get customers.
You're right. I mean, I'm not special. I just decide.
Well, you are special, but there's a lot of special people out there.
Exactly. But I was willing to go deep into the marketing thing. I read a couple of marketing books too. I read The Purple Cow by Seth Godin. I'm sure you know that book, right? And his whole thing is like, just be as good as you can at what you do. That's his whole thing. And I think that was true, more true a couple decades ago. I think now you have to be good at what you do. Everybody's different. Everybody wants different things. But if you're going to do it, you really do have to embrace the fullness of marketing as a conversation with your potential clients and being really clear about what you do. For a lot of people, they think like marketing is a dirty word. You don't have to do what the sleazy marketing, you know? You don't have to do sleazy marketing. You have to do marketing that aligns with who you are, but you still have to market.
You know, when I was searching in my email this morning for your name, because I was trying to find our conversation and things, I looked at the dates in which you had conversations with us, the listeners, or the people receiving your message. And can I just show this?
Yeah. How fun.
11:22, I don't teach three-part breathing, and here's why. 11:26, why taking a deep breath isn't always great. 11:28, the magic of therapeutic breathing. 11:29, navel to spine is a good cue, except when. 11:30, ignoring the face creams, embrace your wisdom. 12:01, breath work needs yoga postures. 12:01, don't you want to say you're certified? 12:02, when 4:78 creates a medical storm. Like, you're having a conversation with us almost daily. And whenever I have a little gap in my day, I'm clicking on that and reading what you're saying. You're not afraid to just continue the conversation, even if I check out for a week and I don't have time. Come back and there's something interesting to look at.
Oh, that's great. Well, I do try to keep to emails once a week, but when I'm having a promotion, then you'll get six or seven from me during that promotion. I created a Settle Yoga Breathwork Certification program last year. I decided to start that because people were asking. And this is what I often do, Amy. Like, I'm just seeing breathwork everywhere. And I took a couple of workshops and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe people are teaching this stuff, like scary stuff that you and I both know could be dangerous for people with trauma histories or undiagnosed heart condition, all sorts of things, you know? And I was like, I gotta do it. I have to teach something. And really, I've been doing that for more than 20 years. I even started my teacher training program because I was like, people need an alternative to what's out there. This is not okay. So yeah, that's what I was seeing out there. So I started this breathwork certification. So I just finished the last piece of it, which was also just like, you could just take it if you wanted to learn a few techniques. And so that's why I did those emails. But when I send an email, even if it's promoting something I'm teaching, I want that email to give the reader some value. So they'd be like, oh, three-part breath, but I thought that was yogic breathing. Maybe I should read this because maybe I was wrong. Like, I want people to think like that.
And that's what happens. Like when I saw the one on 478, I get so irritated with 478 breathing. And when I saw that one, I was like, oh, I want to hear what Christine has to say about it. Maybe she's on the same page as I am, you know?
Which
So
I'm sure I was.
I think so. Anyway, I just want to thank you for modeling it for us. And also this hint about you have to invest in yourself. I work with the Notre Dame of Maryland marketing team now because I'm the chair of their yoga therapy department. And they're telling me, Amy, if you don't pay, it's not going to be seen. Like you can post all day, but if you're not willing to invest in some paid ads on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, like no one is going to see your post. I think I was oblivious to that. I think I somehow thought friends would help me promote it, but no, that's not the case.
No, it is pay to play. It is pay to play. There have been months I've spent $10,000 on Meta in ads. I mean, that's how crazy it is out there.
Wow.
I don't do that anymore because the algorithm has changed and you just don't get the same kind of return on investment that you were getting 5 or 6 years ago. But I typically spend about $2,000 a month on ads.
Wow, thank you for your transparency to just give people an idea. I mean, I think we all look at you and think, she's so successful, but how many of us are willing to shell out 2 grand a month and a marketing person to help us? It is no small thing.
It's very expensive and it's changing constantly. And here's a pro tip for marketing people out there. If you're not on Substack, Substack is the last kind of authentic place for social media. That's the last bastion of social media. I don't know how long it will remain like that, but get yourself on Substack and just put a little something on there every week because that's a way to organically grow some interest in your work. And I don't want people to think like you have to do these crazy amount of investment. You can start small. It doesn't have to be, $10,000 a month. And you can start small. But the main thing is that you are always thinking about what your ideal client wants and needs from you. What do they need from you? And then try and give them as much as you can. You have to think about them like they're your student. You have to think about they're your paying students,
Yeah.
which is hard. Because you're like, oh, I want to protect all this information I have. I mean, I certainly felt like that. I think another thing that I've counseled a lot of people on is like, if you don't want to do the marketing, you could still be a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist. You're just going to have to do it differently. And that may require, like you being a psychologist or a psychotherapist or a nurse or something, it might require a second profession. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's a public health strategy if we start to get more health professionals teaching yoga.
I agree. I think I've discovered I'm not an entrepreneur businesswoman. I taught for 25 years at a university, retired for three, and I was like, whoa, it is rough out here. I'm going back. Love the comfort of a monthly paycheck and not taking any risk. I'm just like a homebody that just wants to do her little thing and her, so.
Well, and that's the thing. And think about the impact that you've made on your students over these years. And there's nothing less valuable about that than there is somebody with 1 million followers, which, by the way, I do not have 1 million followers. By any stretch of the imagination. So, like, that's the other thing is I've been successful as an entrepreneur, but not in the typical yoga space,
Right.
and that's hard.
Well, let's go into that because that's why I wanted to have you on the program. You have such a unique way of bringing the information forward. You're well seasoned at reading research. You understand neuroscience. Your husband is a psychologist, and I understand that the two of you share a lot of information. So, can I just start by asking, and any question you don't want to answer, I complete permission to just say pass on that one and we'll cut
I'm
it out.
kind of an open book, though.
I know, but because you haven't seen any of these questions, I was reading them this morning going, man, Amy, these are hard questions. My first question is, how do you define self-regulation in a yoga context? How does that differ from self-regulation maybe in psychology or neuroscience, or are they essentially the same?
I think that's a really interesting question. So I always go back to models, right? And this is why I love talking about the vagus nerve and beyond the vagus nerve, as I like to say. I think you have to go back to models. So the model of self-regulation from the neurosciences or physiological or the medical sciences is going to look different than the model from yoga, chikitsa, or Ayurveda, right? Because we use different models. And I think they're equally valid. What's the definition of self-regulation? Well, the capacity to be able to monitor and shift and, optimal state, right? To be able to come back to a place of balance after a stressor, to be able to listen into your system and know what it needs in terms of hunger or emotions or fatigue and exhaustion, to be able to listen to your body and be able to make the changes so you stay in that window of tolerance. Very useful definition. And that covers not only the autonomic nervous system and central nervous system, I guess you could say to some extent, and as well as behavioral stuff. And that's a pretty biopsychosocial definition. It's not bad. But then we go over to yoga and we look at, well, what are your doshas? Where are the gunas? And are you in a sattvic state? And that's a different model.
Right.
Equally valid, doesn't get researched enough, but equally valid model, I think as yoga professionals, one of the good things we can do is bring together some of our understanding of those different models and offer that to our students as like, hey, yeah, yoga helps you to regulate your nervous system so you feel more balanced and can make better behavioral decisions, for example. And also yoga helps you to come to a more sattvic state so you can have a deeper sense of who you are and leverage your spiritual assets. And that's not going to be as much of the point of some of the Western scientific understandings of self-regulation, right? So I do think drawing from both of them is really helpful for our students because where do we live? We live in a scientific materialistic culture. And then people are curious to peek outside of that culture so we can give them some yoga too.
Yeah, in yoga, we kind of under the umbrella of self-regulation, we have like awareness, perception,
Right.
breath, attention, emotion, and even ethics, right? Like it's
Yep.
a big tent as opposed to, can I put this thing on my neck? And I'm not complaining about this. I'm just saying it's a different perspective. Can I put something on my neck that kind of buzzes and stimulates my vagus nerve? And again, I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying when you look at perception and awareness and breath and attention and emotion and ethics, that's like a whole different viewpoint than
Absolutely.
machine. So talk about that.
Thank you. Thank you. That's exactly it. That's like it in a nutshell. Because I don't know about you, but I'm getting all sorts of vagal stimulators for Christmas presents coming across my social media feeds. Because I probably Google vagus nerve a lot. But it's exactly it, Amy. I couldn't put that any better than what you just said. Is what do you want? Do you want to use some kind of a tool? Do you eventually want to get an implant? Like that's coming. Or do you want to use these endogenous ancient wisdom tradition tools?
I have
That's
a
a
hard
choice.
question though. I did have a student who had become so dysregulated over decades that for her, because yoga is about self-empowerment and you have to use your mind, which in her case, her mind wasn't functioning very well. Those are her words. She really couldn't shift her perception and have awareness and do breath work. She was asking me, can I use this as something to get started, this vagal nerve toner, to kind of help almost like a massage prior to doing yoga, something to help me move a little closer to being able to do the more endogenous ways of regulation. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. And I think whatever works. I think the issue is more in the worldview, right? It's more about the worldview. So if your worldview is like, I am a machine and I'm going to fix the machine by adding some serotonin or a GABA or whatever, or I'm going to fix the machine by using this machine to fix my machine, you're always going to come up to a brick wall with that worldview because that's not who we are. And that's why, by the way, the healthcare system is such a failure for chronic illnesses, 90% of the 3.7 trillion goes to chronic illnesses, and yet our outcomes are worse than most of countries in the techno-industrialized world, right? So you're always going to hit a brick wall. So if your worldview is saying, hey, I understand that I'm this organic creature of this world, and I'm going to use everything that makes me human to help me get better, and sometimes I need to rely on medication, psychotropic medication, or sometimes I have to rely on a vagus nerve stimulator because we're living in this insane world, like have a shot of whiskey, whatever it is that works for you. You know, you
Bourbon.
have to do those things, right?
Guilty.
Like you got to do those things to be able to survive in this world. So I don't have any problem with it. What I try and help people with is the worldview stuff. Are you really a machine? No, you're much more like a seed that grow. You're whole from the time you're two cells, and you grow and you're whole from the time you are born until your death. You're a whole being that is influenced by a tremendous and extraordinary amount of biopsychosocial or social ecological factors, right? We're influenced by the stars, for goodness sakes. We're influenced by everything. You wouldn't fix a computer the way that you fix a human being. Like it's totally different, but we get stuck in that very mechanistic, reductive worldview. So I just like to help people to change that worldview because they think changing the worldview ultimately is essential for healing. But that doesn't mean you don't use all the great things that the sages and rishis have invented, because there's plenty of modern sages and rishis who have invented great things like vagal stimulators that can help us. So,
Please take a moment with me to go and listen to something a little different, and then we'll get right back to the guest. Many times, as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, or even moms, dads, grandparents, we wonder what's happening with our loved one in between the times we're seeing them. Whether your child went off to college or whether you're a yoga therapist who only sees your client once a month, you might wonder, how are they doing? Well, here at the Optimal State, we have developed a mobile app where people can track how they're feeling mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually at different times of day, seasons of the year. And basically, you can see the data. You can see how your 6 to 10 a.m. slot in your day looks and how you usually feel at that time versus your 2 to 6 p.m. How do you feel at that time of the day? And you can see the patterns. You can set a week, a month, a season, and get the aggregate data so you can see what your pattern is. Where do you tend to go out of balance? And the cool thing is you can just take a screenshot of that summary and send it off to your yoga teacher, your yoga therapist, your parent, your child. It's a really great way to check in. And I think especially for maybe kids that don't want to call their parents all the time from school, they could just show their parent the data, like, okay, I'm doing all right. Here, look at my data for the last 2 weeks. Screenshot, boom, it's yours. Now you can settle down and stop calling me. It could be that, or it could be that your child is not doing well, but they don't know how to say that to you, or maybe your client. And so your client could take a screenshot of their data from the last week and send it to you as they come into the session, so you kind of have an idea of what's going on with them. So there's many ways to use it. And in addition, there are wonderful interventions that help people to come into balance. So I hope you'll consider checking out on the App Store. It's called Optimal State App. You just type that in, Optimal State App, and check it out. It's free for the first few weeks, so you have nothing to lose from trying it out and checking out how to track, how to get your aggregate data, how to send that off, and then hopefully how to get some interventions. All right, now let's go back to our guest. Kind of in a nutshell, what I hear you saying is that you want to help people discover that there's a relationship between self-regulation and self-study, what we call svadhyaya. And what are the factors that are throwing you in or out of balance? And what are the underlying beliefs? What are the thoughts that are happening? What are the patterns that we go to? All of that is yoga.
Yeah, I think getting really clear about the environmental and social determinants of health is so empowering for people. to understand that it's not just about me, that I am this whole being that is interconnected with everything. As we start to get clearer about that, then we get less, feel less guilty about not being able to fix ourselves, and feel more empathy and compassion to the rest of the world and feel more of our connection like that. I think that is as much yoga as, triangle pose.
Much more.
Right. Yeah.
So many questions for you. It's like my personal play day to get to ask you these things. So we're seeing this trend in places like the Veterans Administration, the American Psychological Association, where social workers and psychologists are kind of being told to maybe lay off or not even use the more somatic type therapy because they haven't been trained in the body. They've been trained in more of the top-down approach, the thinking, the cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, all these things, EMDR. But there's a trend going towards like, hey, you all aren't trained to do body regulation. Now, I think this is the perfect place for us to step in and say, but hey, we are trained in that. So this idea of interoception, this ability to feel the sensations inside of ourselves and respond, is a huge part of self-regulation. So I just wondered if you had any opinions on that, if you've heard that trend happening, if that's new information. What do you think?
Yeah, I had talked to my husband a little bit about it. And to me, it sounds like a little bit territorial. This system loves the silos. Oh my God, it loves the silos. So you put everybody in their silo and then you have terrible results. So, like, we really need to do transdisciplinary thinking, I think. So, somebody who's been training mental health professionals for 15 years, like, I want people to feel really empowered that there are lots of things they can do. And therapists aren't going to stop teaching people how to breathe. They're not going to stop teaching people how to do grounding. So, that's not okay, too. Like, it's a little bit weird.
The line that I'm hearing is they don't want people on a yoga mat. They don't want them doing like movement. Like they could maybe still teach breathing, but I think you might hurt somebody. You might hurt their low back in triangle pose or something.
What about like wilderness therapy and Hakomi and, there's sensory motor psychotherapy. I mean, there's so many modalities that are, I wonder what those people are saying. Have you heard anything from those
I
folks?
haven't heard that. The crux of the issue is, are you trained? You could say wilderness therapy, they are trained. Yeah, I don't know. But it's messy right now, I think.
Well, and then from the yoga therapist perspective, I think we need to be on all the treatment teams everywhere, and collaborating with the psychotherapists and the rec therapists and the occupational therapist. Like, we need that. We should be having that spot. Of course, the problem is, like, it's very expensive to get that recognition. We don't have licensure, so there's all of that. Those are huge issues. I wonder if they're going to be solved in our lifetime.
I agree. I was looking at this organization and I could probably pull it up pretty quickly if I needed to, but they're kind of an umbrella organization that is starting to lobby for somatic therapies and starting to figure out the path forward. And I was like, wow, that is really interesting that they're, I'm going to try to pull it up quick while we're talking. I'm just fascinated. It's called ISMETA, International Somatic Movement Education and Therapy Association. I'll just pull it up on the screen. And I just thought it was really fascinating. I started kind of looking through their website, and this is the type of organization that is going to help do that advocacy that you were just talking about, where they have, here we go, professional and legislative advocacy, government regulations, a regulations committee, right? And I think I noticed that IYT is one of their collaborative partners. So I was happy to
That's
see.
cool.
Yeah, so that was new information to me. And I just love seeing all the ways that we're moving in the world as yoga teachers and yoga therapists. And that's a new one I just saw this week.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. So thanks for sharing. Yeah. I think right now we're at this time where we have to be super creative. in terms of trying to find our way into different places. And of course, the healthcare system is in such crisis at the moment. And it's ironic because we have this person in the directorship position at the US Department of Health and Human Services who's the first person ever who's been interested in somatics and alternative medicine and whatever. And at the same time, he's a terrifying loose cannon. So we have
Confusing. Like you'll hear one post and you'll be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And then the next day you'll be like, oh my God, what's happening?
exactly like what is going on? It's terrifying. But we have somebody who could help us. Unfortunately, I don't think he has much power in terms of the budget and all that stuff. And really, like the powers that be right now are not really interested in anybody living or being healthy or happy. Like they're just interested in money, obviously. So it's an interesting and weird time, and I think we have to do a lot in terms of advocacy. I work in advocacy. I'm the yoga therapy representative for the Integrative Health Policy Consortium. So, like, I've been doing that for a number of years now, and I get how much of a juggernaut Washington, D.C. is and how difficult it is to make changes. But there's that, but then here we are in our local communities, in our local level, and you never know if there's going to be some head of a hospital who loves yoga, and you walk in and you're like, this is what I could do. Like, you just never know if that's possible and if they're not going to use whatever their per diem or per capita money that they get to hire somebody. Like, it might happen, So there's the grassroots and then there's the federal stuff, and I think we have to focus on both. And the more that yoga therapists can like get out in their communities and be like, oh, there's this like really popular integrative doctor who loves what I do, and he tells all his people about me, or maybe I do some, sample classes at his office or whatever. Like, that's possible. I think we have to be really creative in how we're getting our work out.
I have to give a talk called The Future of Yoga Therapy. And I've been thinking for over a year, like, what am I going to say? Like, what can I say? Because it's like you said, healthcare has its problems. And here we are, like, should we try to get in with them? Do we not match? Do we match? Licensure, no licensure. Do you think that the way forward is each of us to do our little part on a local level? Try to ride out this storm for the next few years and just get our little tentacles in wherever we start spreading the word. I mean, is that grassroots? Is that basically where we're at right now?
I think we can think bigger than that. I mean, I think grassroots is really important, and everybody should do a little bit of that. If it's not your whole thing, do a little bit of it. Like go talk at the Rotary Club or whatever. Like give talk, do things locally, right? Think globally, though, because that's the piece that really gonna make a change is in the paradigm shift and the worldview shift, right? So the more that we talk to people and we teach yoga that's really authentic and gets to the core of who we are as human beings and recognizes our undeniable interconnectedness and interdependency, as we start to teach that, we start to reach out to people with that message, and we start to change the worldview from this mechanistic, reductive, isolated silos. That's where things change. Things change through the narrative, worldview, mythic level. That's how things change. The people start to see ourselves differently. So yeah, we have to do things on local levels, but also we have to think bigger. I wrote an article called The Future of Yoga Therapy, actually.
Maybe I should read it.
I wrote that about 8 years ago, but what I was getting into were things like look at the Institute for Healthcare. I'm trying to remember because it was 8 years ago, but the Institute for Healthcare Reform and what they're calling for. Look at what the National Academies is calling for. Look at the Whole Health Initiative. Like those things are going on out there. There are things that are happening in those spaces, despite the administration, that are really looking for exactly what we offer. I mean, when you look at the definitions of whole health, it's like, well, that just sounds like yoga therapy to me.
Here's where I get stuck on this. I mean, you and I must think about the same things all day long because everything you're saying is basically the conversation I have with myself. I wonder, we get licensure for being in a silo. Here's your scope of practice. Here's the things you
Problem.
can do. Here's the things you can't do. Because licensure is all about how to keep the public safe. It's not about how to boost a profession and become yoga therapists. It's like, is yoga therapy going to hurt the public? And if so, can we keep them in their little silo to make sure they keep everyone safe? So when we talk about this more holistic worldview of everything from visualization to postures to breath work to chanting, the holistic, the ethics, I don't know how that fits in a silo for licensure.
Well, sure. You're absolutely right, but it still is going to happen because of the powers that be, you know. So I think it's a both and situation. And also, we have the public stuff that we need to be thinking about. So I coined a term that I think would be really helpful, and it's called yoga in all policy. Right. So not just yoga in the healthcare world, but yoga should be in all policy. We should be talking about it in terms of schools and public health and thinking about infrastructure, everything. I think it should be everywhere. And of course, that's pie in the sky. You know, I have Aquarius and Aquarius moon in my chart. But I think when we think about something like yoga in all policy, because health in all policy is a thing already. And I was like, it needs to be yoga in all policy. Like, that's important on the public sector, you know, and it's important for reaching the people who are underestimated and underserved and less resourced. If we don't have yoga in that place, then we get stuck only working with folks with resources, and which they need help too. And they're driving the several wellness industry, whatever it is. The wellness industry is massive. There's a huge amount of dollars in there, but where's that money going to? Lululemon, you know, supplements, a lot of it's going there instead of to the practitioners. I would love to see practitioners actually making a living doing this stuff. I think it's the most important work that you can do on this planet right now. And we have to stop thinking about ourselves as just yoga team. We have to stop thinking of ourselves like that. You know, it's not helpful for anyone, and it's not helpful for you. You love this stuff because it changed your life. So why are you saying you're just a yoga teacher? Stop it. You know? But anyway, so I think we have to think about the public stuff, and I think we have to think about the wellness stuff, and I think we have to think about yoga and all policies. Yeah, licensure is not going to solve our problem. It's going to create more problems, but we still have to have it as an option. You know, there's lots of physical therapists, for example, who work in the system and hate it mostly. And then there's other physical therapists who work at private pay outside of the system, but they have a license so they can do that. So we need to be able to have that option, I think.
So I've been putting together this talk because it's due at the end of the month. And I said the same thing in the talk, that I think just by pigeonholing ourselves in healthcare, that's a very small piece of the pie. And I don't disagree with anything that you've said, but what about yoga in K through 12 education? What about yoga in pain care clinics? What about yoga and therapy in addiction centers? Like, it has nothing to do with getting licensure or not getting licensure, right? It has to do with this more broad look at all the different ways we can serve.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, like, as somebody who's worked in treatment centers, the part of the issue is perception, because I kept getting pigeonholed as like, oh, you're the yoga teacher, like the Zumba teacher, or like other stuff. It sort of hit or whatever. So I sort of got pigeonholed as this sort of recreational, not very important thing. Whereas if I had had a license as a yoga therapist, there would be a certain amount of respect amongst the other practitioners who don't understand anything about yoga. So as much as I agree with you, I totally agree with you that yoga should be in K through 12 education, it should be in institutions, it should be in all of the corporations, you know. But the problem is, like, then what? You go to a treatment center and you get pigeonholed. When I was working at treatment centers, the people who advocated for my work the most were the clients, because they understood what I did. And they were like, oh no, this isn't like exercise or like a yoga class. This is therapy. They would tell each other that.
Yeah. You know,
so that was really hard. It's really hard to be a professional without a professional title. It's really hard. I don't know how we change that. And I agree, there are so many problems with it. I don't know how we fix it though.
And in your view, there's so many things that would need to happen for licensure, right? We could list all the steps. Like, when I think of that, even if we started and we said, okay, we're going to go for this, I think we're 20 years out.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Things can change pretty quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a very big overhaul of a healthcare system. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a revolutionary overhaul of the healthcare system in the next 10 years. You know, what we're seeing happen right now, oh my God, people are so furious about their premiums, you know, and they're furious about the billionaire class. It's extortion, you know, we're all being exploited terribly right now. So there's a lot of change coming, I think. I think we're going to be in a period of transition, and it might be really painful for a lot of people for a while, professionally as well as personally, which is why we need to double down personally on our practices. You know, and really build that regulation and resilience that we're going to need to get through whatever is coming.
The reason I wanted to talk to you was more about the vagus nerve, and we've kind of gotten into a policy discussion, which you're one of the few people that can talk about policy like this. So I really appreciate you taking that left turn with me because I think our field needs to be educated by people like you. And going back to personal practice, going back to finding stability and balance within, what else can you tell us about the vagus nerve and the research around it and what you think about the vagus nerve? Because I think we have to look at this like, what is yoga bringing that maybe these machines aren't?
I think Stephen Porges is a genius. Like, obviously, his work has been so profoundly changing for so many of us. And what you have done with him and Marlisa, like, all of that has just been an incredible, really, this incredible contribution to our field. And we know, like, once you start getting to know a little about the vagus nerve, you're like, oh, that's what I do. I help people self-regulate. I think the biggest contribution that Porges has made is the vagal break. To me, that's the biggest contribution, is understanding that the inhale is not sympathetic and the exhale is parasympathetic, but understanding that when you inhale, you're letting up on that vagal break. And when you exhale, so that you understand that the parasympathetic nervous system is much more involved in what's going on with the heart than necessarily we previously understood. We had this kind of like, I mean, I still think that we have a pretty, I guess you could say, reductive understanding of the autonomic nervous system. It's much more like a dance. It's not just, you know, flip on the switch and your parasympathetic is on and flip on the switch and your sympathetic. Like, I think that's been a pretty reductive understanding, and we need to have a more nuanced understanding of that. So, like, in terms of what the vagus nerve has contributed to our knowledge base as a profession, I think it's been phenomenal. And I'm very grateful to you for all of that you've contributed. And then, what I would say, why I like to talk about beyond the vagus nerve is because I think that as Western people, we fall into a thinking trap a lot. And that thinking trap is scientific materialism and reductivism and mechanism. So we fall into this thinking trap of like, oh, if I just put on this stimulator or I do this 4-7-8 breath or square breath or whatever, I'm going to stimulate my vagus nerve. And maybe I even know that I'm going to improve my heart rate variability. And we go back into mechanistic thinking all the time because it's so hard to climb out of that trap, you know. But when we start bringing in some just from social work philosophy or psychology philosophy, like, well, let's talk about the biopsychosocial spiritual model. How does the vagus nerve fit into that? I don't want to take the biopsychosocial spiritual model and shove it into the vagus nerve. I want the vagus nerve to inform the biopsychosocial spiritual model so that I have a much broader perspective of who I am. And then when you go to the social ecological model, which goes into the systems and your culture and the universe, like, now we're starting to talk more like yogis. The social ecological model is like, what about your vasanas that come from your grandparents and the tribes that you came from wherever in Europe somewhere or wherever? Russian steppes. You know, so now I'm going to take the vagus nerve and I'm going to situate it in that model. And then the vagus nerve can be helpful for me, but it is not the model. You know, it's not the whole ontological model of who I am as a human being. When I really look at who I am as a human being, it's so much more than a nerve, you know. And the other thing is Dan Siegel's interpersonal neurobiology, I think, is so important too, because it's like, well, and this Porges does this too. Like my vagus nerve is, it's not encapsulated in here. It's being influenced by all my interactions and the way I think about myself and the way I situate myself in this planet. Like all of that is part of it. So when you look at this completeness of who you are, I think we deserve so much more than one small, well, it's a large nerve for the parasympathetic, but one kind of small nerve. Like we deserve so much more consideration than that. So the yoga philosophies through models like the koshas or the Sharirashraya, you know, these three body theories, or Kashmiri Shaivist cosmology, like whatever is your drink of choice, that we can go into these philosophies and then go, oh, here's the vagus nerve. How does it fit into these rather than the other way around? And I think that's changing that perspective is really important because if we're going to be a yoga, and I see this all the time out there, Amy, I see so many yoga professionals that have just focused on like, you know, stretching or fascia or just one little thing. And it's fine. Like you can focus on one little thing and fractal it out if you're going to do that. But why not start with the whole and then figure out how the thing fits into the yoga? Because I'm a yoga teacher. I want to
Right.
fit it into the yoga model. I don't want yoga to have to try and squish itself into some, you know, reductive, scientific, materialistic perspective. It just kills the magic of it, in my opinion.
And the synchronicity of it all working together, the ethics and the breathing and the perception and the awareness and the interoception and the co-regulation and all of it has more potency with all of those elements working together. That's the magic.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And you know, you talk about yamas and niyamas. That's Patanjali's first go-to for self-regulation. Like, that's it. You know, well, it's not the first. I mean, if you put in the eight limbs, it is. If you look at the sutras, it's in the second pada, but still, like, that's self-regulation right there, you know. And Patanjali did give us a system, and then the hatha yogis and the tantrics kind of extrapolated on it in their own, whatever nuanced way they came to it. And it's a system, and you pull something out of a system and you collapse the system and you render that thing you just extracted much less potent than it would be if it was in the whole system. So yoga is a system for human transformation and flourishing. And we seem to really have trouble conveying that to people. It just feels a lot easier to be just like, oh, let's do this yoga for your vagus nerve, you know? It feels a lot easier to do that than it is to actually go into them. It is easier to do that because it's just the way we think.
So you have just opened a door for me. Marlisa Sullivan and I have been having this conversation for about 4 or 5 years, where we talk every week and we just continuously have this conversation. And so about 2 years ago, we decided to write a book on this exact topic. And we just handed in our 230-page book to Rutledge. And part of the title is called Reimagining Well-Being. And it's exactly
Nice.
what you're saying is we laid out the eight limbs and the yogic path and then fit the vagus nerve and the neuroscience into the framework of yoga, not the other way around. Does that make sense?
Nice. Yeah.
We actually asked Stephen Porges to write the foreword, which he agreed to, and he was thrilled. He was so pleased with the more holistic way of looking at it. And many people don't know this, but as a young man, he was heavily influenced by yoga. So, you know, even Stephen Porges loves the idea of holistic nature and then fitting the vagal tone and the nervous system into the larger picture.
Oh, I'm so excited you're doing that, Amy. That's really
Me too.
fantastic.
In a
Yeah.
labor of love. I've never written a book before, but with Marlisa's tremendous support, she's written a few books. So she was really the
Right.
one who showed me the ropes on writing a book. But I'm just so happy to hear you say it because it's exactly what we've been trying to get across. And that let's not put ourselves in these little boxes. Let's claim yoga and yoga therapy as a holistic way to reimagine our well-being. And this is what we do. We don't have to just do the fascia or just do the this or just do the breathing, you know?
Yep. It's very interesting. I've seen a huge sort of migration away from yoga, but from a lot of movement professionals. They don't even call themselves yoga teachers anymore because they're like, yoga sucks and yoga hurts you. And if you're going to be a yoga professional, I think it is on you to learn about what yoga actually is. You know, it's not stretching for God's sake, you know, and people will say that and then they'll stick some kind of a poster of the yamas and niyamas on the bathroom wall in the yoga studio, but then they just go stretch. Let's really teach yoga and let's learn it. And when you've been mistaught, get retrained. Who cares? Nobody's going to be like, oh, you had to. I just finished a training program last year. Like, I mean, you know, go train.
Well, I highly, highly recommend your trainings, Christine.
Thank you.
What do you have upcoming? Can I pull up your website and show anything that you want to talk about? What's going on with you, and how can people learn with you?
I have many, many courses available online. A lot of them have to do with the nervous system. Like, I have a course called The Neuroscience of Yogic Meditation. So, I wanted people to understand that yoga has a special meditation. And I have a 50-hour teacher training, and I do live events at least once a year. I'm teaching a workshop in Maryland this year. I'm teaching in Brazil in January, and I'm teaching in Asheville in March. And then, yeah, I have lots of stuff that's available just if you wanted to learn a little bit about my work. You might want to try a course called the Science of Slow. Yeah, that's on-demand course. The Science of Slow is just like kind of my intro course that gives you some ideas about the benefits of working with fatigue, depression, anxiety, chronic pain, and body image, weight management stuff. So yeah, you know, you're welcome to check out any of my things. I also have, if you go to free resources there, Amy, I have a ton of up at the top next to media. I have a ton of free stuff in there. You know, you can just download those. We ask you for your email address, but you all that stuff is free, and you can always unsubscribe if you don't want to get my emails.
And this is what I show the people in our business class.
Oh dear.
I constantly go through your website. I'm like, okay, look what she did here, or look what she did here. She's got on-demand courses, which is passive income for her, and very, very well done courses. She's got live courses. She's educating us. It's beautiful. Your website is beautiful. You have,
Thank you.
weekly classes. There's just so many ways for people to find you and work with you at a level that works for them, right? That it could be a weekly class, it could be the free downloads for now.
Yeah, I do weekly classes on Wednesday, and that's part of my membership group called the Subtle Yoga Resilience Society. So if you're interested in that, you can check it out. Yeah, I want to thank you for all the wonderful work that you do, Amy, with this profession, and you've been so dedicated over the years. Thank you. And thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here and have time to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you to our guest this week, and thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Something that I've been working on behind the scenes with my friend Marlisa Sullivan is going to come out in 2026. We've been writing a book together for the last year where we go deeply into yoga philosophy and yoga therapy. And then we have the scientific vagus nerve, heart rate variability, all sorts of polyvagal theory to back up why it is that yoga philosophy is right on track and why it's been helping people for thousands of years. We're turning in our book this fall to the publisher, and in the spring of 2026, it should come out. So we're just giving you a little heads up that that will be coming out soon. And when it does, we can't wait to share it with you. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.